Justice Resnick is not participating in the cases that we argue today. We're pleased to have sitting in the first three cases in place of Justice Resnick, Judge Stephen Shaw, who's a judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the third appellate district. Welcome, Judge Shaw. The first case is 05-2093, Gary Onesti and Leon Zients versus DiBartolo Realty Corporation. Mr. Kilbane.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning to the court. Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. I am Tom Kilbane of Squire Sanders and Dempsey, representing the defendant's appellants. I request 10 minutes for my opening comments and 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time there.
Thank you. First, contrary to what the plaintiffs urged in their appellate brief, this appeal is not about whether Ohio permits the offensive use of issue preclusion or collateral estoppel. Of course it does. The cases are legion under the right criteria. We never contended otherwise. What we contended and what is on this appeal is that the Seventh District engaged in the unprecedented use of offensive claim preclusion or res judicata without any authority from any jurisdiction in the country. The appellate court stripped the defendants of its unadjudicated affirmative defense of novation. The novation defense was based on the fact that the plaintiffs knowingly and voluntarily agreed to substitute programs from the Simon, to substitute from the DiBartolo deferred stock program to the Simon Properties deferred stock program in writing at least 2 months prior to the change of control. And therefore, they have no claim with respect to deferred stock under the old program.
Mr. Kilbane.
Yes, Justice Pfeiffer.
Vukovich seemed to dispose of the novation issue by saying you never get there, that your client had an affirmative duty to lay out some facts to show that novation or a modification of the contracts with the other employees in the other lawsuit either wasn't present in that lawsuit or that there was some factually substantive difference between the situation of these two employees and the rest of them.
That's correct, Justice Pfeiffer. What the court did was taking the doctrine of claim preclusion or res judicata and saying because that doctrine forecloses defenses that were raised or could have been raised, that because novation could have been raised, it was foreclosed. That is what it did, and indeed, it recognized, contrary to what plaintiffs argue, that it could not go off on collateral estoppel or issue preclusion because novation had never been raised, never adjudicated in the related Agostinelli litigation. So the court went to the concept of claim preclusion. Our disagreement with that, though, is the cases, both in this state and outside, define claim preclusion as a defensive. It's anomalous. A claim preclusion is to stop an offensive claim. In other words, it's used as a shield, not a sword. The court, in order to say that we lost the novation defense, basically applied claim preclusion because they could not apply issue preclusion. And we say that's wrong. It's anomalous because if the first judgment had really determined all of the issues, then these plaintiffs did not have to bring a new action seeking new and additional relief. They weren't covered by the first.
Hey, I'm just curious. We don't know from this record whether the situation of the employees in the first lawsuit was the same or not with respect to this issue. Factually, where are you on that?
Where we are, Your Honor, is plaintiffs have put in to the record when we have filed a motion to strike because it is based on documents not of record below. They, for the first time in this case, are arguing that novation was in fact litigated and adjudicated in the Agostinelli case. We believe it's absolutely clear, even when you go off the record, that it was never adjudicated. It could have been raised, just so I'm clear. The same letter, the June 1, 1996 letter, was there, but the defense was never raised. When you look at the affirmative defense, it was never raised. Novation is never mentioned. It's never adjudicated. That's what the district court said. It could have been raised. There was another issue involving that June 1st letter, a totally different issue about severance and damages involving people other than plaintiffs. But I am not here saying it could not have been raised. It could have been raised. It wasn't. Our contention is, under Ohio law, we are not foreclosed in defending using novation, which the court, at the conclusion of its opinion, said, if we were allowed to use novation, we probably would win.
Mr. Cobain, I believe, and maybe I've misinterpreted what the appellees are saying, but I think a part of their argument is that they arguably won summary judgment. The entry on summary judgment is one page. It's very brief. It doesn't tell you why. And they argue that they could win it straight up without these things. Do I misinterpret that?
You don't misinterpret what they state, but it's totally inaccurate, Your Honor. The Court of Appeals said, no, we contend. What gets mixed up is, right, they're arguing stare decisis on the cases on their claims, which we didn't dispute, by the way. We're relying on our affirmative defenses, and there they're just wrong. There was no conclusion that there wasn't a genuine issue. I mean, there was a statement about genuine issue material fact, but the Court of Appeals found that was false. And when you read the language of the June 1 agreement.
Well, did they find it's false, or they just didn't address it? They seemed to go off on res judicata and collateral estoppel. And
they did, but just one second, Your Honor. In a couple places, they mentioned that you need res judicata to get to the result the trial judge did. But I think at the end, most of the defenses raised by appellants herein are barred by the doctrine of res judicata, and they're talking about claim preclusion. Had appellants raised various defenses in the Agostinelli suit, such as novation, waiver, and estoppel, or had appellants satisfactorily demonstrated how such defenses could not have been raised at that time, appellants may have been successful in this suit and in Agostinelli for that matter. I think the fact that the Court of Appeals is saying, if novation is in, we could be successful. Indeed, we're asking this court, we think it's clear as a matter of law, to reverse and enter judgment that, in fact, we are there. We have a clear language of substitution of programs in that letter. And indeed, in the Court of Appeals, they didn't argue what they're arguing here. Plaintiffs argued that we have a bunch of cases saying that it's a question of intent, and they cited all their cases caution for a remand back to the state court for trial. It's only in this court, for the first time, they're arguing novation was adjudicated in the underlying litigation.
And the whole litigation turns on a contract.
The whole litigation turns on a contract.
And there was no jury.
That's correct. And indeed, it was adjudicated by summary judgment in the related litigation.
Mr. Kilbane?
Yes.
From a factual standpoint, are there differences between the Agostinelli defendants and Mr. Onesti and Mr. Zients?
Well, the difference is that these two stayed on.
Period of 6 years during the course of the litigation.
Well, they stayed on as employees. I mean, a number of employees in the Agostinelli were severed. They did not get a chance to stay on. These two were offered a position, and they stayed on for a period of time. Indeed, Mr. Zients, the lawyer, did get the 96 and 97 under the new program stock. But as far as other differences on this record, I'm not aware of what differences, if any, there are.
And
they all did sign the June 1st letter, which is not of record here, but is a fact that has been brought out.
Does that appear in the record that some of those claimants stayed on and Mr. Agustin, Onesti and Mr. Zients did stay on?
You have to read the underlying Mahoning County Court of Appeals, and you would conclude that, because there are about 13 or 14 that were on this severance issue that I addressed involving the June 1 letter. So you can see that they're differently situated because they were not offered jobs, and therefore they were entitled to the severance. And that's why the court went off and said, we're not going to buy this double payment.
And that's why the novation becomes more relevant here, because these two did stay on for 6 years?
One stayed on, I think, for about 2 years till about 98. The others left, I think, January of 97. They did not leave a long time. They both left voluntarily, and they had stayed on. But I think the main thing, just so I'm clear, Justice O'Donnell, is that in the first case, novation was never raised. We were in counsel at that time. A decision was made not to raise it, to fight on a bigger issue, which I think is another reason why defensive applies rather than offensive. A decision was made. It was never adjudicated. It wasn't determined. And that's what we have set forth these cases around the country that contend that somebody can't come back as a plaintiff now and say, you're foreclosed from using this defense on the theory of claim preclusion. There's no doubt it was never litigated. If it had been litigated, then you would face offensive collateral estoppel and then mutuality and then the wait and see rule and those items that we've had addressed. But it was never, and our position is you can't be stripping, you can't be using a prior action as a sword rather than as a shield. I see my time is drawing. I'll reserve the 4 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kilbane. Mr. Shimko.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Timothy Shimko. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, and I have the privilege of representing the appellees this morning. The first point I would like to touch upon is the issue that you raised, Your Honor, which is that in this particular case, using traditional Rule 56 language and making absolutely no reference to the doctrines of res judicata or collateral estoppel, the trial court in this case granted plaintiff's motion for summary judgment and denied defendant's cross motions for summary judgment, finding that there were no material facts in dispute.
Counsel, though, the Court of Appeals is going back and looking at the pleadings and concluding that the reasons for, I'm assuming they're concluding because they spend all, Judge Vukovic spends all of his time talking about collateral estoppel and res judicata. He also talks about privity, and I'm having a hard time understanding the privity here.
All right, and I think here is the difficulty, Your Honor. I think that both the Court of Appeals and the defendants in this case have blurred the doctrines of res judicata, collateral estoppel, claim preclusion, and issue preclusion. The use of the terms are used interchangeably. They are not strictly interchangeable. All right, res judicata applies, generally speaking, almost universally, between the same parties. You need mutuality in res judicata, and that issue of mutuality is generally satisfied by the fact it's the same party suing the same party, perhaps raising different claims, different issues, but that's res judicata.
And we don't have it here.
We do not have that here. What we have here is collateral estoppel. We have someone in privity with the plaintiffs in the Agostinelli case who is suing the same defendants in the Agostinelli case on the same principles raised in the Agostinelli case. That issue of mutuality, although this court has relaxed it in the past, and it seems to be the trend across the country, whether in res judicata or in collateral estoppel, that courts are relaxing the issue of mutuality. But that doesn't have to happen here because
Mr. Shimko, your analysis is good and it's instructive. But if I understand Mr. Kilbane's argument, he's suggesting that while there may have been parties in privity and there may have been similarly situated persons, the issue of novation was not litigated or not raised. And what I'm understanding his argument to be is just because they didn't raise it doesn't mean we're not entitled to raise it. And the court denied us the opportunity to have our day in court. That's pretty much what I'm getting from the argument.
And while I follow
exactly what you're saying with respect to collateral estoppel, I think it's correct. How does that preclude a party from raising a defense that hasn't been previously litigated?
Because traditionally that's what the doctrine of collateral estoppel has permitted, right?
But They're not the same parties.
I would say this, but they are. But my parties are in privity. My plaintiffs, the appellees here are in privity with the Agustinelli plaintiffs. And
how do you get privity out of the, right here.
Okay.
How do you get privity out of the fact that they're co-workers? Privity usually is some sort of, you know, master-servant relationship or successor in interest or something like that. But the fact that I work with Justice O'Donnell and I choose to sue somebody, how does that bind a coworker who has no relationship with me other than he works for the same company? I'm having a real hard time getting to that leap.
All right, well, if that were the only fact, yes, I would agree with you, Your Honor. But in this case, these were employees, the same class of employees. Each of these employees signed the same 1994 DeBartolo stock plan. Each of these parties were
similarly
awarded stock
situated,
under.
But not no relationship to each other except that they worked for the same company. They don't have, those workers don't have relationships to each other, which is where you get your privity.
But this court has relaxed that ruling or that particular doctrine, Your Honor, the extent that if you have mutuality of interest, it is not mutuality or privity in the sense that master, servant, or contractual between the two. Privity's the issue of privity has been decided oftentimes whether or not there has been a mutuality of interest here.
And well, if you're going to go on mutuality of interest, then shouldn't you bring in wait and see doctrine? Because you're letting my coworkers decide my fate by this theory that you want us to broaden.
All right, and let's talk about that, Your Honor, because that's where the defendants in this case have blurred collateral estoppel and res judicata. The wait-and-see doctrine has nothing to do with claim preclusion. Park Lane talks about collateral estoppel. It is an issue preclusion doctrine. And what Park Lane says, that, whoa, you know, we are not going to automatically say if you wait and see that you're banned from applying the doctrine of a collateral estoppel. What we are going to say is that that is one factor that a court may consider in its application of discretion in deciding whether or not to apply the doctrine of collateral estoppel. So in this particular case, if this court elects to adopt the wait-and-see doctrine, it won't change the result of this case for this reason. The defendants presented no evidence that the trial court did not consider the fact that the plaintiffs were wait-and-see plaintiffs in this case. There's no evidence whether they did or they didn't, but it was their obligation to present that evidence. Second, the Court of Appeals clearly considered the wait-and-see doctrine, discounted its importance, probably because the defendants could not show any prejudice or discrimination as a result of the application of the wait-and-see. So clearly, they considered the wait-and-see factor in this case. Now, in order for the defendants to prevail on that, they would have to demonstrate that there was an abuse of discretion. And that's a terrible burden for them. There's no depraved, ignoring of the law or rejection of the law in this case. So even if you were to apply the wait and see doctrine in this case, it don't change the result of this case. So I would suggest, Your Honors, that this may not be the case to decide whether or not Ohio should adopt the wait and see doctrine. It clearly hasn't up to this point. But getting back to the issue of—
Counsel, before you go there, do you see any distinction between the classes of, or between the individuals who were parties, plaintiffs in the first case and the second case, because the Onesti and Zients were retained as employees? What's if anything, is that distinction?
It's only the length of time they were retained as employees. All of the plaintiffs in the Agustinelli case were retained as employees up to the point of the merger, and even a few days beyond. These particular plaintiffs worked a little longer for Simon. That's the only difference in this case. And they are relying, and in the Agustinelli case, as I pointed out in my brief, they relied on that June 1, 1996 letter to show an arc of waiver that the plaintiffs in Agustinelli received stay bonuses to stay there, and that by accepting the stay bonus, they waived their right to get the DeBartolo stock. Now, Your Honors, we'd have to agree that waiver and novation are very close cousins in the law. There's a lot of similarities between novation and waiver. First, in Ohio, novations and waivers are never presumed. Both must be proven by clear and definite evidence of an unequivocal intent to either create a novation or to participate in a waiver. Now, they certainly raised waiver in the Agostinelli case. It was in their affirmative defenses in their answer. And in their briefs to the trial court on summary judgment and to the Court of Appeals, the second time in the Court of Appeals in the 7th District, they argued that June 1, 1996 letter in terms of waiver. But all of those arguments and the arguments that they're raising here could very easily support an argument for novation. They could have raised novation. They didn't raise it by name. The fact that they characterized those arguments in Agostinelli as waiver instead of novation, I think the 7th District saw right through that. In a sense, that's what they did say.
Counsel, did I at the opening of your argument, you said this is not a case about race judicata.
Red herring, don't need it.
So this is a case about what? How would you couch the theory?
There are no material facts in dispute, Your Honor, that my plaintiffs signed the same contract, had the same rights under the same contract as the Agostinelli plaintiffs. So there is clear precedent. There was a case that preceded this case in the 7th District that...
And do we call that issue preclusion as opposed to claim preclusion, or is it...
I don't think you need it at all, Your Honor. I think you take a look at the facts, you take a look at the contract that DiBartolo signed and that these people signed, and you take a look at it and you say, okay, what does the plain meaning of that contract say? 7th District previously said the plain meaning of this contract says people in the same class as these plaintiffs get their money. Okay. Now, they did raise two issues. They raised novation and they raised waiver in the trial court. Trial court says, well, I don't find, well, we must presume, they said, I don't find novation or waiver. The Court of Appeals said the same thing, Your Honor. You indicated earlier that the Court of Appeals said that it could not be decided on summary judgment. I would direct the court's attention to paragraph 25 of the Court of Appeals opinion.
No, I don't think I said it couldn't be decided.
Okay.
I'm sorry. But when Judge Vukovich discusses novation, he says it was trumped by issue preclusion. Preclusion.
Think he had to go there, Your Honor.
So you differ with how he disposed of novation.
He could have disposed of it using collateral estoppel, yes, because it had been raised in the prior litigation.
Okay, because that's the way I read paragraph 45 of his opinion, is that he's addressing why we don't even have to deal with novation. He's essentially saying they didn't affirmatively put anything in, so it's gone.
That's certainly one way to read it also, Your Honor, but I would go a little bit further. Now, he did seem to use claim preclusion by saying since they didn't put it in, claim preclusion prevents them from raising it here. Well, so does issue preclusion, Your Honor. He didn't have to go to claim preclusion to get there. You know, and the point is, if this case gets sent back, is the result ever going to be any different in this case? Because the only defense that they have hung their hat on is this novation defense, and let's take a look at the merits of that. You know, as I said, novation and waiver are close cousins to each other.
And so could you look at the Park Lane question, the unfairness issue,
sure,
and address whether we're talking about what could have been done, what the defendants could have been done, but your plaintiffs here could have joined the earlier action, could they not?
Could very well could have.
And
Your Honor,
do you see any unfairness in our ruling in your favor in this case?
No, Your Honor, because there's a 15-year statute of limitations. These defendants were not surprised by those plaintiffs. They knew they were out there. All of the Park Lane test can be evaluated, and the defendants can show no prejudice. You know, I think unfairness would have to include a concept of some prejudice to the defendant.
Though, that they have a defense now that wasn't raised in the first case. You don't see that to be a prejudicial situation? When a defendant says, I have this defense that was not, we were not allowed to litigate it in a second action when additional plaintiffs came forward.
Well, I would say, Your Honor, you know, first, the facts in this case is that they certainly did raise that defense or something very clear, very, very close to it, incredibly close that I can't tell the difference between the two. You know, so I don't see that there's any unfairness there. If they are able to raise the defense here, and that's why Justice Pfeiffer's question is, can this case be decided on summary judgment? They did raise novation in the trial court, and the trial court didn't seem to have any difficulty in saying, I don't think you've established novation. And therefore, under Rule 56 principles, you lose. They did raise these defenses. In the trial court, there is no evidence that the trial court relied upon res judicata or collateral estoppel principles. It looked at the arguments, it looked at the facts, so there were no material facts in dispute. And I would say that the court was well-founded in so deciding. If you were to look at the language, one sentence in a 3 or 4 page letter that they're counting on to constitute of novation and a waiver, Your Honor, I doubt that anyone could consider that letter as clear and definite evidence of an unequivocal intent on the part of the appellees, you know, to engage in a waiver or participate in a novation. That was the only evidence, one sentence in that letter. That's all they're relying upon.
Counsel, in the first case, the letter was in evidence.
Exactly, Your Honor. On an issue of waiver. And the issue in the first case was that the other 28 plaintiffs received this stay bonus under that letter.
Same trial judge in both cases?
No, different trial judge, but same Court of Appeals panel in both cases. So, but, Your Honor, getting back to the issue of, you know, whether or not there is substantial, if there was sufficient evidence for the case of novation to go to a trier of fact, the language that they're relying on is one sentence, with regard to your continued eligibility to earn awards of SDG stock. Now that's Simon stock, your continued eligibility to earn Simon stock under the long-term incentive plan. Now this is a Simon plan, not a DeBartolo plan. For 1996, 1997, and 98, you need to acknowledge that you understand the substitution of Simon stock for DeBartolo stock. Now that makes sense because DeBartolo stock was being delisted and only Simon stock was going to remain in existence.
Then how could you substitute Simon stock for a non-existent DeBartolo stock if it didn't refer to the previous DeBartolo stock?
Well, what do you mean, if it didn't refer to it?
Mm-hmm. What DeBartolo stock are they talking about, Simon stock being substituted for?
Well, you have to understand what's being offered here is that there was a plan being offered here. These were key employees. They wanted to keep these key employees, and to do that, they wanted to offer them a deferred stock plan like that in DeBartolo. But my point is, Your Honor, that from that language, and they also say this, you understand the substitution of Simon stock for DeBartolo stock, the revised FFO targets, and you're consenting to the other terms and conditions hereof by signing and dating this letter.
Was there going to be any more DeBartolo stock available to be put into this plan after the letter?
No, for this reason.
Okay,
Your Honor.
All right. So the letter refers to the substitution of Simon stock for DeBartolo stock. Is that correct?
It tells them that you're going to earn Simon stock instead of DeBartolo stock.
Right. Well, it says it's substituted for.
That's the language that they use. That's the word that they use.
Substituted for. Well, the only DeBartolo stock was the stock that they had already acquired a right to, not any prospective stock in DeBartolo stock, because that would not be in existence.
You have got my point, Your Honor. The fact of the matter is that the plaintiffs, at the time that the merger occurred, had fully performed to earn all of the DeBartolo stock to which they were entitled. There was no more consideration that the plaintiffs had to give to get all of the DeBartolo stock promised to them under the 1994 plan.
All right, Counselor, when you say I got your point, I understand what you're saying, but my concern here is that there was a transformation of DeBartolo stock into Simon stock and a substitution.
Well, on the market, Your Honor, in the marketplace, All of DiBartolo shares were exchanged for Simon shares at a rate of 1 to 0.68. Mm-hmm. One Simon share to 0.68 DiBartolo shares. That occurred in the marketplace. When this happened, the plaintiffs had already fully performed to get the full benefit of their award under the 1994 Deferred Stock Plan. And that's what the 7th District decided in Augustinelli. When the change of control happened, plaintiffs are entitled to their full shares. Now, what's happening here, Your Honor, is that this is an offer of employment. And as an offer of employment, they have also offered a stock incentive plan. And they have told these people, in rather sloppy language, I would say, that you're going to earn Simon stock instead of DiBartolo stock. Now, Your Honor, you would have to agree that,
you need to sum up. Your light's been on.
Oh, boy, I didn't even know which light to look at. So,
the red light means stop, but you had a question from Justice O'Connor. Are you finished with your answer?
I don't know now, Your Honor, but I will obey the red
light. I think you have. Thank you, Mr. Shimko.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Kilbane, you saved 4 minutes of your time. Let me start you with a question. Give me your strongest argument on the issue of the tailored relief to fit the unique circumstances of your client. You've argued that your client has this. Obviously, I'm referring to the City of Dayton case. How are the circumstances of your client unique? So unique that they're different than the circumstances presented in the first case.
Well, Your Honor, we do claim that they do not have privity, that these are simply co-employees, and they have relied on the Brown case, your question. And we believe that the Brown case had the same objective, which was the invalidation of the ordinance. Here, these are two plaintiffs seeking different relief. They're seeking relief for themselves. They're not seeking the identical relief. They're seeking similar relief, I will give. But they are not in privity. I agree with the questions. They're co-employees. Indeed, the case they cite out of New York, they spend pages on, that New York Second Circuit case in district court, the Zanuck, found that co-employees do not have mutuality, even if they're going after similar relief. In that case, it's very close to ours. They were thrown out of their jobs. They're all seeking reinstatement and damages, and the court found no mutuality. Mm-hmm. I think that applies here, although it's a Second Circuit case. So we contend there's no privity. We can't find anything where a co-employee should be in privity. On the wait and see, we were prejudiced. First of all, we raised this as a salutary principle out of Park Lane, and I think it makes sense that if you're going to use offensive, whether it's collateral estoppel or offensive claim preclusion, which we're asking this court not to accept, the fact is you should not wait 6.5 years. Everybody agrees. These two plaintiffs could have joined the lawsuit. They did not join the lawsuit. As a result, 6.5 years later, when we're trying to assert a novation defense, they won't let us do that. That's part of the prejudice. We're also in there expending money defending a case when they could have easily joined the other 27 or 28 plaintiffs. And finally, we've been stuck with a very, very high prejudgment interest award by virtue of the fact they sat out there for 6.5 years. And as the court knows, it runs for most, there's been a change, but it runs from the time of the breach. So we're back to August of 96. So we think we've been prejudiced. We think, more importantly, it's a salutary principle that this court should follow, that the 8th Court of Appeals followed, because it just is good for judicial economy. We shouldn't encourage potential plaintiffs to sit on the sideline, wait to see if there is a win, and then come running into court to file a new lawsuit.
Mr. Kilbane, would you address the comment of opposing counsel regarding the similarity of waiver and novation?
Yes. First of all, they're brief, and he misstates an oral argument as they do in the brief. We said novation and modification. That's throughout our brief. In their brief, they start calling it novation and waiver. Novation and modification are different, by the way, than waiver and estoppel, because it requires the intention of both parties to a novation. But more importantly, the law is crystal clear from this court that the issue has to be identical. For him to come up and say it's close cousins, it's close, it's similar, novation was never tried in the court. The district court so found. And one other historical fact I find fascinating. The trial judge in this case originally did find there were genuine issues of material fact in denying our motion for summary judgment. He found genuine issues of material fact. It was after Mr. Shimko went and said, you made a mistake, and back and forth, and we all filed briefs. He finally changed to say there was no genuine issue of material fact. You cannot read the language that Mr. Shimko just read. We can contend that this is a substitution of programs, that they changed into the Simon program from the DiBartolo program 2 months before the merger, and therefore they cannot claim under the old program. It's a very simple argument. He read the language. He's right. We're relying on that language, and we have never been able to have that defense. The Seventh took it away from us, and we're here to ask this court to reverse the Court of Appeals and enter final judgment in favor of the defendants, because
Counsel,
we believe the novation is clear and unambiguous and witnessed by a written document.
Counsel, opposing counsel said there's no difference between the first set of plaintiffs and the current set of plaintiffs because they both stayed on as employees.
Some stayed on through the merger and got the stay bonus, as I pointed out before, and that was an issue on that June 1st agreement. These individuals stayed on longer. We are not relying on that. We are relying on the fact that novation, even though it was available, it was never raised, never litigated, and therefore collateral estoppel, issue preclusion does not apply. The only way you...
So, for clarification, the length that these two employees stayed on as employees after the merger is really irrelevant.
It's relevant only as to some of the issues. The severance issue, which he relies on, because they were offered the employment, that severance issue, which the Agostinelli dealt with, doesn't apply to these plaintiffs. So there are differences. I'm just saying there are differences. But in terms of the years, I wasn't trying to make that difference as I was that they signed the June 1st. But there are differences, and there were differences in the arguments.
Thank you, Mr. Kilbane.
Thank you very much.
Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.